ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 13.
Sa esha atma swaparitya buddhibhir durachyano kramano nirupyate muyanti yadvartmani vedavadino ब्रह्मादयो येष भिनत्ति मे मतिम् स एष आत्मा स्वपरेत्य बुद्धिभिः।
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: Persons who always think in terms of enemy and friend are unable to ascertain the supersoul within themselves. Not to speak of them, even such exalted persons as Lord Brahma, who are fully conversant with the Vedic literature, are sometimes bewildered in following the principles of devotional service. The same Supreme Personality of Godhead who has created this situation has certainly given me the intelligence to take the side of your so-called enemy. Purport: Prahlad Maharaj admitted frankly, "My dear teachers, you wrongly think that Lord Vishnu is your enemy, but because he is favorable toward me, I understand that he is a friend of everyone. You may think that I have taken the side of your enemy, but factually he has bestowed a great favor upon me." सएष आत्मा स्वपरे इति अबुद्धिभिः दुरत्यया अनुक्रमणो निरूप्यते मुह्यन्ति यद्वर्त्मनि वेदवादिनो ब्रह्मादयो हि एष भिनत्ति मे मतिम्। प्रह्लाद इज टेलिंग हिज टीचर्स, इज गिविंग एन एक्सप्लेनेशन एज टू व्हाट हैज कॉज्ड हिज intelligence to go in that particular direction, which according to his teachers is a sign of complete bewilderment. Shanda and Amarka, his teachers in school, are trying to teach this son of the emperor the art of becoming a king. And Prahlad is trying to explain to them that the consciousness which he has achieved doesn't have any place for something like a friend or an enemy. I thought we can use this time together to understand why Srimad Bhagavatam especially has personalities who say that we don't want any friends or enemies in this world. Frankly speaking, is it possible to survive without a friend? Is it possible to live without an enemy? These are the questions which confront us. The Niti Shastras explain, you walk 7 steps with someone and he is your friend. Any small journey, it just takes a little bit of acquaintance, some commonality, and you strike a friendship. There are examples where I am giving a very material angle on this. We are Indians. And we see a lot of Indians every day. And we might feel we have our fill, we don't need them anymore. But what if we are in some foreign place and we just see one person who looks like an Indian? And immediately there is an urge to go and strike some conversation. Are you from India? Yes. North India? Oh yes. Delhi? Oh yes. And then as many commonalities are, they are notched up, you feel so happy. Oh, I met somebody who's not my friend exactly, but then there was nothing which prevented us from having a friendly conversation. How nice it would be if we just have had friendly conversations all the time and not get bored. But sadly, life is not like that. Check it out in your own mind, the ratio of how many people whom you meet or have met, and there is an urge to have a deep friendship. Vis-a-vis, on the other side, there are people who immediately go in the enemy camp. Oh, I can't deal with this person. I can't. There is nothing which clicks. We are not on the same wavelength. So rather than finding commonalities, we are confronted with differences. Mitha is a Sanskrit word which means combination. Combination means even like a social intercourse, you meet somebody, or in due course of business, you are a purchaser, you are buying from someone, you are a seller, you are selling someone something, and that leads to confrontation. There are so many devotees who engage in business and they are saying that I have to lie through my teeth all day long and it's so difficult. Or sometimes you see the other guy is lying through his teeth and you just find it so difficult to even continue that thing. So friends and enemies are born because of mitha, social combination. It's an inevitable fact of life. So what do we do to become happy? Well, we have some experts who say that, I will teach you how to make friends and influence people. And you say, wow, that's nice. That means, I make someone friend and I influence them. And I influence them for what? Obviously for my profit, isn't it? If you meet someone and you say that I have this job at this particular corporation and you know I have this much salary, and that person says, oh very nice, then that means you can help me every month with some financial problems, right? And you say, no, I don't want friendship with you in order to help you. I want friendship with you in case you can help me in some way. So there are various clubs, there are various organizations which are formed where people find the commonality and what, how he can help me, how he can help me. And just imagine a room full of people where everybody has the same goal as to how I can influence someone else so that he or she can help me. Do you think they have come here for friendship? No. In the colonization era, when Great Britain was expanding her colonies, one politician was asked that, is France your enemy or friend? And he gave the famous reply, Britannia has no friends, only common interests. In Europe, we'll fight the French, but in India, we'll give them Pondicherry just for one small corner where you can be happy. In wars, Britain and France fought together. And in peacetime, they fought each other. Well, not so actively, not a hot war. So this thing of having friends in high places especially, that's like a very attractive proposition, having friends in high places, that becomes the goal of a person's life. I need to have friends. We'll find someone threatening. Don't rub me on the wrong side. I have friends in high places. That means my friends can do you harm. My friends can protect me. One short note. This expert who wrote this book on having friends, the art of making friends and influencing them and influencing people, had very few friends at the end of his life, and they could not prevent his suicide. If he had so many friends, or if he knew the art, how come he didn't have good friends to even have a proper conversation that could prevent his suicide? So, it is a very, very difficult path. Material life becomes very difficult when you feel you don't have any friends, or you feel you only have enemies. And the worst part, Srila Prabhupada points out in the conversation, Prabhupada gives very nice insights as to how certain philosophies, they might just have some emotional sources as to how they spring up. Prabhupada says Mayavad or impersonalism, they might have philosophical understanding in a different way, but the root is, in the due course of events, your very deep friends become greatest enemies. A wife, a lover, a son, a daughter, a business partner, when they become the transition from a staunch friend to the greatest enemy, the quicker it becomes or the deeper its impact on your life, and you come to this conclusion, no more relationships. As devotees following a very personalist path, we sometimes wonder, how can someone fall for impersonalism? How can Mayavad be attractive? But there is a reason. And the reason is, because of failure in understanding this particular Siddhanta. It's like an axiomatic truth. Today, anyone who is your friend, there is every chance he can become your enemy. Not that he may want to. Of course, if he wants to, it's quicker. But sometimes, even if he doesn't want, there is rivalry. When the Pandavas had to marry one wife, five husbands and one wife, Narad Muni had to intervene. He came and he said, look, you five brothers are thick friends. Of course, that friendship is also dependent on how they respect each other. It was not just sharing your bread or butter or something like that. The Pandavas, they were following the leadership of Yudhishthira Maharaj. So Narad Muni gave a warning. Any time your friendship can be defeated, can be destroyed. And they said, but how? He said, because of this one wife. So make certain arrangements so that your devotion to each other is protected. He gave the example of two demons, Sunda and Upasunda. They were such thick friends that they had done tremendous austerities, and the boon they had taken from Brahmaji was, let us be the cause of each other's death. They were so confident that we would never do anything, any harm to any other, to each other. So if at all we have to die, let that be at each other's hands. And as with everything else, Brahmaji had said, Tathastu. And now that they know that Sunda knows only Upasunda can kill me, Upasunda knows only Sunda can kill me, and we are so much together, we like to fight together, eat together, drink together, we share the same mindset, we are equally demoniac, we don't like Vishnu, we share so many common things. How can there be any fight, any disagreement between us? And then their menace became so much. All the three worlds were tormented. The demigods were crying to Brahmaji, please, please do something. Trahi, trahi, please help. So, as the story goes, Lord Brahma, he asked each and every demigod, each and every personality with some vibhuti, some opulence, that surrender a fraction of your beauty, something which you have, and let's make a personality from that. And thus was born exceptionally beautiful maiden called Tilottama. Till, everybody gave a sesame part of his opulence. And thus, that whole entire contribution became this beautiful girl. In fact, when she was created, some of the demigods wanted her for themselves. Then they realized that it's just like you take out some money for giving a donation and you find that, I think I need it more than that particular cause. But anyway, they gave, and then Brahmaji said, everybody restrain yourself. She's a weapon. She's meant to protect you. So somehow intelligence prevailed and then she was let loose. And she traveled freely throughout that particular area where both these brothers were relaxing after a good day of fighting and troubling others and eating and drinking. And then one said to the other, let me introduce you to your sister-in-law. And the other said, I'm sorry, she's your sister-in-law. And then one said, look, I haven't asked any favors from you. Now just this one instance, just control yourself. Let this woman be mine. And he said, I can say the same thing about this one. Why don't you restrain yourself? You know, whenever you had to do whatever you wanted to do, did I ever tell you anything, right or wrong? And this one thing led to a big discussion, big altercation, big fight. And finally, both of them lay mortally wounded by each other's blows and they both died. So, all the demigods heaved a sigh of relief and later Brahmaji agreed not to give such kind of boons again. But what happens is that demigods have a fall into a wrong boon kind of problem. Someone satisfies them and it's too much to not give. It's a case of reputation as to what will people feel. The whole system of being a demigod depends on whether you work or not properly, if you are given the proper resources in sacrifice. So throughout Vedic literature, we find them doing the same thing again and again. So the main point is, there is nothing which can prevent friendship and enmity in this world. So how does one live? There is a story, Srila Prabhupada used to say, about a poor boy. He just had his mother, no father, living in a small village, and the teacher one day said, tomorrow is my father's Shraddha. The teacher's father's Shraddha. Previously teachers did not accept any salaries. So Shraddha means a big feast, basically. So each boy has to contribute something. So someone said, okay, we will bring all the rice. Some boys said, we'll try to bring vegetables. Some said ghee, some said utensils. And then this boy's turn came. So what will you bring? He said, well, I have to ask my mother. She said, okay, go and ask. So he came back home. He asked his mother, what should we contribute for teacher's father Shraddha ceremony? And the mother said, Do you know we are so poor? I don't know what I can give. Hundreds of people will be coming. What can we give? Dinabandhu can help us. So he says, who is Dinabandhu? He says, oh, you don't know Dinabandhu? Dinabandhu is your friend. So he says, I haven't met him. He says, no, he always gives all that you have, your clothes and whatever meager food we get to eat. Everything comes by the mercy of Dinabandhu. So the boy just sets out in the forest and shouts, Dinabandhu, Dinabandhu. And nobody comes. Four times, five times he shouted and nobody came. And he said, my mother can never lie to me. And he started crying that, Dinabandhu, if you don't come, then who will help me? So Prabhupada says that he had his implicit faith in his mother, and also those tears, those sincere tears. Krishna can never tolerate a sincere call. Krishna is not an ungrateful person. So as soon as this boy was so sincerely beseeching Krishna to come, Krishna came and he said, I'll give you a bowl. You take this. What is it? He said, this will contain yogurt. Tomorrow, this will be full with yogurt. So don't worry, you can give this yogurt to your teacher. So the boy, the next morning he goes to the teacher and says, Guruji, I have this yogurt for your father's Shraddha. He becomes so angry, you think that I should feed hundreds of people with this little meager yogurt? And he throws that bowl on the floor. All the yogurt, dahi, spills over. As soon as he picks up the bowl, it's full again. So he empties in a container, it's full again. He again empties it's full again. So he comes to know that this is no ordinary bowl. Who gave it to you? This is my friend, Dinabandhu. So Prabhupada says that Krishna's friendship is like this. We need to qualify ourselves to attain Krishna's friendship. But the Siddhanta is, from Krishna's point of view, what does he say? If you become a friend to me, then I'll start behaving like a friend. No. He says, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam. He says, I already am the best friend of every living entity. Quite an interesting thing. How do we know if somebody is a friend? We have a simple yardstick. A friend in need is a friend indeed. Krishna says, I as the super soul, I accompany each and every living entity, whatever body he takes. If we have a friend or an acquaintance with some dirt on his shoulder or whatever, and we say, hey, that stinks, please change your shirt or clean yourself. How about staying in the heart of a worm in stool, just because this particular soul wants to do that? How about staying in the body of a pig? You wanted to eat stool. Okay, here it is. So the super soul, Krishna as super soul, is actually the most intimate friend we can ever have. And we can say, then why doesn't he help us? Why doesn't he give us good direction? He does. The Bhagavad Gita is an act of friendship towards all living entities. In fact, all our attempts to have solid friends and obliterate our enemies, they end in disaster. In the Niti Shastra, there is a story of a frog king who was staying in his well. And somehow he became old, feeble, and he could not deal with some inimical elements in his community. Few young frogs were not accepting his authority. So he was thinking, what should I do? He hit upon an idea. He went out of the well in one jump and found a python. He told the python, would you like to eat frogs? He said, well, not my specialty, but sometimes for a change. He said, well, look, normally, we can't allow anybody in this well. But since you are my friend, I'll allow you. And there are some elements to be taken care of. Some distant relatives of mine who are members of my community, but they don't agree to my will. So you should eat them. But only one a day, that's all. He said, fine, no problem. A A python usually sits and waits for his meal. But he says, other than waiting and having no surety, now you at least you know in a well you can find. Every day there is one prey. So one by one, the frog king, he shows that one today. And one day he says, so now, this one is the last. From tomorrow morning, it's goodbye. Thank you very much for everything. So next day morning he finds the python is still there. He said, I think there is some miscommunication. You didn't understand. All my enemies are over now. And the python says, I am too feeble and old and lazy to walk out. And you know, if you don't agree, then what I can do? So he says, my God, I have walked into a big problem now. He said, okay, now my enemies are gone, but some distant relatives are still there. Who knows, who cares if they are lost? One day all the distant relatives are over. Then comes the turn of the near relatives. Then comes his immediate family. And finally he himself. So as he was gobbled, he said, I was a fool to ask this kind of help to get rid of my enemies. Normally, how are you sure somebody is your enemy or somebody is your friend? When everything is based on common interest, everything is based on the idea to exploit this world, your friends and enemies are one and the same. In the purport to the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna's name Govinda is mentioned, when Arjuna says, oh Govinda, I will not fight. It's a nice juxtaposition. Govinda means somebody whose senses you are meant to satisfy. And Arjuna is telling someone, it's like telling, boss, why don't you serve me? You get it? How can you call somebody boss and expect him to serve you? If he's your boss, the only thing should be, how can I serve you? So Prabhupada raises that point. If Krishna actually is Govinda, one whose senses we are meant to satisfy, then how can Arjuna tell him that, I can't fight this war because this war is against my sense gratification. I need to keep my grandfather intact. I need to keep my guru intact like that. I need to keep that relationship intact. And in the beginning Krishna is saying, well, you want to keep it intact. Is it going to remain intact? It's going to fall apart anyway. Of course, that doesn't mean, Prabhupada clarifies that, just because someone is going to die, you may not hasten the process. You cannot say that nature was going to kill him anyway and I just hurried it. No. You have no right to take any life. Of course, Krishna also says, I am also not going to take anybody's life. When the warriors were present as alive, Krishna as Virat Rupa could show them dead, entering into his mouth of Virat Rupa. And when somebody is already dead and gone, Krishna can still show you where he is. So what is this thing called life and death? Prabhupada says in a conversation, these are just masks. This is a makeup which we take. One soul is having a makeup of a father, one soul is having a makeup of a son. The real relationship is on the platform of the soul. And therefore, when Krishna comes here by showing us Golok Vrindavan in Gokula, Gokula is the form of Golok Vrindavan, Krishna shows what kind of friendship you can expect there. We don't want to be Mayavadis, we don't want to be impersonalists, we want relationships. But we are looking for relationships in a place where there is danger that anybody can change at any moment. In one sense, it means that our heart should be callous. But it can't be so easy. We just can't say that, oh, this friend betrayed me and that's okay with me. Oh, this enemy has hit me now and it's okay with me. with every social interaction, there is some registration, there is some change. Satsuru Maharaj writes in his book, this book was completed by Prabhupada and him. Prabhupada gave the initial purports, and later purports were provided by Satsuru Maharaj, Narad Bhakti Sutras. He gives the story of the monkey and the crocodile. The monkey and crocodile are good friends, and then the crocodile's wife wants to eat the monkey's heart and liver. And when the crocodile takes the monkey down, the monkey finds it uncomfortable. He jumps out. He tries to jump out, but he can't. He's in water. And he asks the reason, why are you taking me down? He says, we want to eat your heart. And he says, oh, quick, think something. So he says, why didn't you tell me that before? My heart is out there on that branch to dry. We monkeys, we have a special heart. It becomes dirty by eating so many fruits and everything. So we need to wash it every week and hang it out to dry, and then he put it back again. So he said, really? You didn't tell me before. He said, well, you wanted my heart, right? The other part of the body is not very much used to you. So I'll give you the heart. So he goes to the bank, jumps and says, you fool, can someone stay without his heart? So Maharaj writes there, that's how we should have to deal with this outside world. Whether it's your boss, your colleagues, peers, subordinates, neighbors, anyone. We need to interact with the crocodiles in this world, but don't give them your heart. Your heart has to be given to the Vaishnavas. Our heart has to be there. As they say, home is where the heart is. So if we have a solid understanding of who are my friends, with whom can I, now, we all don't come as if ready to be full-scale, pure devotees. We all carry our baggage. Like some devotees say, I am basically introverted. Some say, I am too extroverted. That, I run into problems. These are the samskaras of our sojourn in this material world. And it is bound to be. But the hope is, by the process of Bhakti Yoga, Srila Prabhupada says in lecture, this is from Jaiva Dharma, Thakur Bhakti Vinod says, as you start performing the basic principles of devotional service, your acquired nature in this world, it gradually shrinks. It is yours. It is here to stay with you. And you don't know what to do with it. But by the process of Bhakti Yoga, it can shrink. And your spiritual nature, which is like the form of a seed, by the chanting, watering process of chanting and hearing, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare, that can grow, that can blossom. And that's our real nature. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami gives a very vivid description of Krishna's friendship. Now Krishna says, all jivas are my friends. But the fact is that in the material world, they don't treat him as friend. But what about those special ones? Krishna's friends are called Vayasyas, of the same age. Krishna is God, but doesn't behave like God, otherwise the whole thing will be spoiled. So his devotees, who are as his friends, they have the same age, same appearance. In fact, these 8 paintings on this side, they are Krishna's most intimate friends. Among Krishna's places of pastimes, except for Vrindavan, everything is a Pura. Pura means a city or a Nagara. Only Vrindavan is a one, forest. There are the Puravasis, Pandavas, who are Krishna's friends, and very, very sweet, solid friends. But then there is a city, this is a city friendship. There is a special sweetness to Krishna's friends in Vrindavan. They are of 4 types. they are Surit. In fact, Prabhupada says the Sanskrit language has so much variety just to denote a friend. You may say he's my friend and he's my dear friend and he's a very dear friend. But it's like still friend, friend, friend. In Sanskrit it could be Surit, Mitra. A Mitra is an ordinary friend in social intercourse. Hi, hello friend. A Surit is Rit, is close to your heart. Heart is involved. Rit and heart, same sound. Udasin is a neutral person, Madhyastha. So the Gita says, here Prahlad Maharaj is also telling his teachers that don't involve me in this business of making friends and enemies. In fact, you don't make enemies. You make somebody friend, that's good enough. The enemy will be born later. The same person. Is it not? You don't tell somebody that you are my enemy. You tell someone that he's my very intimate friend. That means I am not. It's simple. You tell someone that I like this, that means you don't like that other. So that's how complicated and difficult this world is. So when the spiritual, when the scriptures say that this Yudhishthira Maharaj is called Ajata Shatru. Ajata Shatru. Jata, born. Shatru, enemy. His Shatru was never born. And his name is Yudhishthir. Very steady in fighting. How is that? His name says that he is a very steady warrior. Warrior means doesn't practice alone. He fights with people. Then why call him Ajat Shatru? From his heart, he never accepted anyone as his enemy. Duryodhan is telling in the Mahabharata, I simply don't know why when the Pandavas, their prosperity increases, I feel so much burning in my heart. I don't know. Does he don't know? We all know why it comes, because of jealousy. Now today somebody might say, oh, I feel so jealous. That means they know. They are not supposed to feel jealous, but it comes. Jealousy is that kind of a virus or a bacteria which once enters your system, it can't take it out. Even an antivirus vaccine doesn't work on it. So jealousy, envy, there is no recourse. That's one qualification of Arjun. Anasuyave. Krishna is telling Arjuna so many of his glories. And Arjuna says, yes, I agree, my lord. In Vrindavan, when the coward boys would come and say, do you know what Krishna did today? There was this big animal. Krishna went and bifurcated his beak. And the Brajvasis say, Krishna is wonderful. Simply, Krishna is wonderful. He can do that. The fact that Krishna is God and sometimes all his potencies are there to help him doesn't even cross their mind. While in this world, if you just say that Krishna is God and that's enough. Like once, me and Krishnan Prabhu, I have told this before, but I can't resist it now. We were traveling and we met a beggar. I mean, he was begging, but he was also mad. We could see that he was a complete lunatic. He would laugh, smile, then he would also ask someone for money or whatever. And Krishna Prabhu told him, chant Hare Krishna. And he said, no, I'm not going to chant his name. He said, Krishna is God. My God. That was it. He started hurling a heap of abuse at us, thankfully, not at Krishna. And he said, he started quoting Bhagavad Gita. Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvachami Pashyati. He says, what did Gita say? God is everywhere. I am that. And I said, wow, he's mad, but not mad enough to understand that he is not God. He's convinced. So, when Prabhupada makes a blanket statement that everybody in this world is envious of Krishna, and we may say, well, I haven't done anything Or somebody in the West may say, I hardly know who Krishna is, to think of envying him. But then, what's the goal of your life? Well, little money, nice house, some occupation, a career, some joys of life. Well, where are you going to get them from? Where is your intelligence going to come to get that little money? Krishna says, Buddhir Buddhimatam Asmi. That's mine. And that money which comes, I own everything. Well, I am a bit special. Everybody paints, but I paint specially. Tejas, Tejas Vinamaham. That special category which you have, you sing well, that's me. What does it mean that's me? It's like you get borrowed clothes, borrowed wristwatch, borrowed jewelry, and then you tell someone that, look at this watch my father gave me. And someone says, that's mine. It's true, he lent it to you. So in that sense, whatever we want in life has to be stolen away from Krishna if you are not his devotees. The demigods, if you satisfy them, they will give you something pro rata. First is pro rata, that means what they can give. According to the sacrifice involved, and only what they can give. You can't ask Lakshmi for a beautiful wife. She may say, no. Take money, beautify yourself, and take your chance. You might get a rich wife, may not be a beautiful one. So it all depends. You can't ask Saraswati for Lakshmi. She says, I give you all the knowledge of that particular subject. But whether you can sell that knowledge and be rich? So many poets and painters, some painters, their paintings have fetched $40 million 200 years after their death, which was in a lunatic asylum. So no guarantee that they can have everything. So the demigods are so picky about their sacrifice. One wrong syllable, one ingredient missing, hell and brimstone, the whole thing will backfire on you. And Krishna, as a real friend, says, fruit, leaf, flower, water, if not all four, three, two, even one will do. Prabhupada says in lecture, but people object, why does he want even a leaf, and a flower, and a fruit, water from me? How come he's so cheap that he can fall for these small things? He's not cheap. Your devotion is cheap. That's why he's saying, at least do that. And any leaf, it may not be the most fancy leaf or the biggest leaf in the world. Any water, any fruit may not be sweet even. Whatever is locally produced. Why? The first reason is that Krishna says it already belongs to me. So, it's not like I'm going to enjoy your fruit. Like we feel, if one Lakshmi Devi favors me, I know I'm digressing from the friend's topic. Still there. One Lakshmi is favorable upon me, I can be happy. Lord Brahma explains, there are millions of Lakshmis waiting to be served. Waiting to be ordered to serve him. Now you can imagine, you can estimate the wealth this person has. So if Lakshmis don't get a chance to serve, what about my small offering? So Krishna doesn't need that. Because he doesn't need that, therefore, he can ask for anything simple. The demigods do need each and every part of that offering in order to sustain their egos or their jobs or whatever. If you don't give them that, they can't provide the results. And Krishna says, I am also involved in this transaction. When I see that you don't have faith in me and you have faith in a particular demigod and you are reasonably sincere, I make your faith steady in that fellow. In that particular demigod. He doesn't have the power to make your faith steady in his worship of that demigod. So that faith also has to come through me. So therefore, these friends of Krishna, Shudde Goswami says, that Krita Punya Punja, a lot of pure pious credits are involved. Otherwise, you can't become a friend of Krishna. And because they are non-envious, they enjoy life there. Pure friendship. Rupa Goswami gives four specific categories. First is the Surid. They are the Vrindavan Surids, not the material world variety. Well-wishers, Surid, Sakha, ordinary friends. Confidential friends, Priya Sakha. And intimate friends, Priya Narma Sakha. All are pure devotees, all are eternal associates. And how do they relate? The well-wishers, they always have this mentality of protecting Krishna. In fact, a group of well-wishers, the names are given. Devaprastha, Karandhama, Vishal. Once, all of them came together and started brandishing their weapons. Some had clubs, some had sticks. And then one of them said, "Wait! That is not Arishtasura on the mountain. It's just a black cloud. Don't worry, he's not going to come down and kill Krishna." Even a cloud makes them feel that, hey, here is Arishtasura and he's going to kill Krishna now. So now we have to be careful. You make a ring around Krishna and I'll protect him. Let us see how he can challenge my biceps. They're very strong. I can kill him. That mood comes in these well-wishers. The friends of Krishna, they are those who sometimes rise earlier than Krishna. Normally, there is no competition with Krishna, but to dress Krishna is like the main activity of the day for Yashoda Mai. So these young sakhas, they rise early, they tell their mummies that quickly, I have to go and see, watch Yashoda Mai dress Krishna. And then 3-4 of them are standing at the doorstep with their sticks. There's a nice ISKCON painting about that. And Mother Yashoda is just like our pujaris, so much to decorate and so less time. And so she is putting something on Krishna, a little bit here, a little bit there. And then she sees the boys there. They are smiling at Krishna and says, "Hey, don't just stand there. Come and help me. Take that ankle bell and put it on Krishna." So while Krishna is told to stay still and Mother Yashoda is putting all the ornaments, Krishna takes the chance to tease that fellow and then they start joking and say, "Krishna, please be still and don't joke with him. You do your business." So that's the job, or that's the main part of the day for these friends. The confidential friends, now the intimacy becomes more thicker. Like, see that painting of Govardhan Hill. The Brajavasis are worried as to whether it should remain or not. One calamity is gone. We are not feeling any rain. But what if this thing comes down? Because only Krishna is holding it with his left, with the pinky of his left hand. And that's like quite troublesome. Krishna is glancing at the cowherd girls, at Radharani. Balramji has seen Krishna doing that. Or before Balram sees that, Krishna sees somewhere else. But then he's worried whether he saw me, did he see me do that? So he's worried, and then because of that, the small finger trust starts to tremble. And Govardhan trembling means like rumble, roar, pebbles falling down. And here comes this dialogue from this confidential friend. It's serious. There's no joke involved here. He says, "My dear Krishna, if you feel that you have held Govardhan long enough, give it to Sridhama. He will, or Sudama, he can hold it." And Krishna says, "No, if you feel that, you know, any of us can't hold it, at least change hands, because then we can massage your left hand." That is the mood. In fact, most of these confidential friends were convinced that just few days ago, when wrestling with Krishna, I had thrown him to the ground. He is not that strong. And now he's holding Govardhan Hill. I can't do that. Come on, anybody can do it. Any of us can hold Govardhan Hill. That is the level of intimacy they have. If you tell him that he has all potencies, you know, the Bhu, Neela, and he says, "Come on, I can defeat him anytime." So that is the nature of confidential friends. And the most intimate, Priya Narma Sakhas, they are not so much bothered with protection or other things. They are the canvassers of Krishna between the gopis, and whenever there is a fight, and when Radharani is sulking, she is in her maan, that Krishna, you are not allowed here. That is the time when someone like Subal or Ujjwal, they come. There is a verse Rupa Goswami gives that Radharani is telling that, see how intelligent Krishna is. He knows if he comes here and makes entreaties, I am not going to allow him. So very intelligently he has sent Ujjwal. And Ujjwal, I know, is going to come and describe Krishna so sweetly that my heart is going to melt. I am going to say, okay Krishna, you can come again. So this is the realm of friendship which Krishna is inviting away from this temporary experience of friends who were enemies before or enemies who were friends before. And that's what he is saying here, Prahlad Maharaj. Sva para, sva is mine. Oh, he is my friend. Para is my enemy. Sa esha atma, atma is a super soul. Sva pare iti abuddhi bhi. That's not intelligence. It's like two very powerful views colliding. Shanda America as sons of Shukracharya. Shukra means semen. So that is the parampara they have. That the son of a guru is a guru, then his son is guru, his son is guru. It's like business dynasties, political dynasties. It's just the way this mundane world flows. And for some time, that may look to be the real world. But I need to have friends in high places. I need to make friends. Or worse, I need to deal with my enemies. And no one has gotten out of this material life alive. That's a fact of life. So this thing simply continues. The names change, the characters change, the mentality remains the same. What Prahlad Maharaj is advising us is, in order to give that whole thing completely away, no more mundane friends, no more mundane enemies. That doesn't mean that this world can treat us any way we like. Prabhupada says, if you cheat me once, shame on you. Cheat me twice, shame on me. We need to be smart. While doing some business dealings, property dealings in New York, they said, Prabhupada, you're very expert. Prabhupada said, I'm a Calcutta boy. What if New York? Nobody can cheat me like that. So, having no friends and enemies doesn't mean pulling your pockets out and saying, hey, anybody, if you want my money, take it. Doesn't mean being a fool. Doesn't mean being a nincompoop. Doesn't mean being a simpleton or whatever. But, simplistic. Having as our friends, the devotees of the Lord. First of all, having the Lord as our friend. Prabhupada says, even the spiritual master is your friend. He's a friend of the fallen. Without friendship, nothing can work. Even this mundane world needs some iota of friendship, some lubrication in order to get it going. So, why did Prabhupada go all the way to the West and try to help? That feeling of helping the fallen. And that is true friendship. Once we get a taste of that, then we can deal with this world where nobody is our friend, nobody is our enemy. They are just working for self-interest. And we, while dealing with them, are not dealing with their self-interest, but we are using everything in Krishna's devotional service. Thank you very much. We shall stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Radha Gopinath ki. Any comments, questions?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, you mentioned about friends in high places, and a lot of us who are involved in work or business, we tend to spend a lot of our energies in developing such friendships. But if you actually have faith in the Lord, then you don't really need friends in high places. So it's very difficult to, you know, balance the two, because if one is doing whatever he needs to in terms of devotional service, then the friends, whether you have friends in high place or not, it doesn't matter in terms of whether it's your business or your family or anything. So how does one kind of balance or reconcile on that?
This is precisely the duality of sadhana bhakti versus higher forms of devotion. We cannot feign that we are on a very high platform. If I need to cook, then I need to actually bring the grains together, grind the flour, make dough, then make chapatis, bake them properly. I need to know how to make the chapatis properly from a teacher, from an expert. While Krishna, if he can empower someone, he can just put, let there be chapatis, and the whole thing can come. Well, it may not convince you so early that this life is not so simplistic. The fact is that if you are placed in a particular juncture, at a particular point, where it is part of your job to cultivate somebody in high places, if it is, you can take help from your equals, from your spiritual master, from your seniors, and with their blessings, like in the case of the Beatles, where Prabhupada told specifically his disciples, go and cultivate them. And what was the actuality? When George Harrison came out of his studio, and there was a big group of people sitting waiting for just one glance of his favor, he chances upon Shyam Sundar Prabhu, shaven-headed, in robes, and he says, where have you been? Now just see the miracle. Prabhupada could have told him, I've already worked with Krishna and he's waiting for you, just go and wait in the studio. No, it doesn't happen like that. Although Prabhupada created miracles, is still making miracles, but still he didn't claim that. Krishna cannot be used as some good luck mumbo jumbo. There is a relationship involved, and Krishna responds to relationship. So if Krishna sees that you are striving to do that with the blessings of your Guru Varga, with everybody, and in case you meet someone in high places, you are giving him Krishna first. Then that's the purpose of your meeting someone. Your job, your project could be like a bridge between a chasm, between a valley. So you construct the bridge at your own cost so that guy can walk out. Up to you. Sometimes he may, even the bridge is ready, he may not walk. So you meet halfway. So, in this way, we can see that Prabhupada always encouraged devotees to give books to professors in high places, to cultivate. He told someone that if you make Mayapur the way Bhaktivinoda, if you can bring the Queen of England to inaugurate Mayapur city, Thakur Bhaktivinoda will personally come and take you by the hand to Golok Vrindavan. Of course, we can understand what sense it was said. So he wanted that, but for what? Like we know, if the Queen of England comes to some project, do you need to tell some small-time newspaper, could you please come to our temple? The Queen of England is coming, by the way. You need to take steps to stop the press. That is the main point. So rather than doing things this way, if you do it this particular way, there is more preaching. Similarly, another example. Prabhupada wrote the Bhagavad Gita. It went through so many, it's a wonderful story of perseverance on part of Prabhupada. But we'll just cut it to that part where the manuscript was published by... it was not published. It was lying there. And Prabhupada said, I want someone to print this Bhagavad Gita. And the devotee, he went to none other than Macmillan's. At that time, a very reputed and a big publisher. And he is waiting there. People are seeing, they are accustomed to seeing people coming with big wads of manuscript, and most of them with 8-7 publishers saying rejected, rejected, rejected. And this man says, I have something, what is it? Philosophy book, that section over there. He goes there, he meets a person, he says, you know something, we want to publish a Bhagavad Gita. And he says, here it is. So many times, miracles, or we can say Krishna, we don't speak of miracles. For us it is Krishna's arrangement. Krishna arranges everything. Krishna arranged the sun to rise today. We didn't think of a miracle because it's an everyday arrangement. So only when something happens so strange, so out of this world, so unnatural, when conveniently thinking that nature is also acting under Krishna's order. So what we see as natural is part of Krishna's miracle. Only when it becomes upside down, then you call it a miracle. Otherwise it's a miracle every day. So therefore, if we treat, my viewpoint, if we treat this particular thing of trying to influence people in high places, not specifically for my, like I don't need to sell him 10,000 clips so that the governor can become my friend. No, I need to give him Krishna too. If we add that, then the sale or the contract, that becomes an added thing. And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj is like, he's on record. He said, the way I dealt with Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay, the boxer, he would introduce Bhaktivedanta Maharaj as, meet the Swami, my most intimate friend. Why? Because Maharaj never exploited his name, his fame for anything. And devotees, as we can do the same thing. So, if it is part of your process of meeting people in high places, we are meant, this is Raj Vidya, this is meant to be given to leaders. Now the leaders may not be exact leaders, but we need to teach them that, in order to make them better leaders. So if that's part of your service, go ahead. But you have to give them Krishna. Is that okay? So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Shri Radha Gopinath ki.